a book. Just do it. You know, sit down at night. It doesn't have to be perfect the first time out, but sit down, give your, and try to make the same amount of time every day. For me, it's between 10 o'clock at night and 11:30 at night. That's when I do my best writing. And just type and see what comes out on the paper. And you'll, a lot of times, if you're not the outline writer or you're not the visual writer, you'll find that, you know, you'll type words and it may not make a whole lot of sense. Or you may type something and say, oh my God, that's the greatest thing that I've ever written. Make sure that you're following up on that and then pursue that. And there's a lot of times when I'm writing when, you know, I'll, in the editing process, I'll read it and I'll say, that's not the way I want to say that. And I'll write it again and I'll write it again. And, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. I would allow yourself at least a year. It's always a good idea to find authors you like and watch their writing style and see how it mirrors yours. So, but I'm to the point, and I turned 60 on Monday, I'm to the point where I'm not letting anything get in my way anymore. You know, I'm not letting fear get in my way. I'm not letting societal norms. I don't want people to say, you know, he shouldn't do that because he's 60 years old. If I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And so I wanted to write a book. I wrote a book. I want to write a screenplay. I'm going to do that off of one of the two books that I have written. I've had two studios approach me about writing the screenplay for the player. And so I want to get that in process and get that done. But don't be worried about what people think. And whether your book ever gets published or not, doesn't matter. It's something that you did for you. So don't let anybody tell you that you can't do it. We're at the quarter hour mark of the show, and I wanted to talk today about the race. Oh, before I do that, I mentioned that Monday was my birthday. It was my 60th birthday. And I have to give a big shout out to my friend Scott Hobbs. He's a realtor in Bridgewater. He used to be a Bridgewater policeman. He used to ride on my crew along with his father on the Greenhole Rescue Squad. And on Monday, now about a year ago, I had posted on Facebook a video of a young man. He was about 6 or 7 years old, that where the police and the fire department drove through his neighborhood for a birthday parade. And I posted that on my Facebook page and I said, I want this. Next year, I'm 60 years old. I want a police and fire parade. Obviously, I'm never going to grow up. And so Scott shows up at my house on Monday, and we're having, or on Sunday, and we're having a little family get together, even though it was raining, to celebrate my birthday and my son's birthday, Brandon. And he goes, "Hey, you got a minute? Come on outside. I want to." I had won a prize on his radio show, so he brought that. He goes, "Come on outside. I want to talk to you for a minute." So I go outside, and everybody follows us outside. And right about the time my feet hit the front porch, we start hearing sirens and this parade of police cars and fire trucks and ambulances, and a couple of friends came through our neighborhood, went around, you know, the loop there, and then came back out. It was every fire department in Bridgewater, and my old squad, the Greenhole Rescue Squad, was there. The Bridgewater police were there. And I got to tell you, at 60 years old, it just gave me a big thrill, put a big old smile on my face. So, again, thank you to Scott Hobbs for making that possible. And, you know, as he said, be careful what you wish for. And it was just a great moment for me. I really enjoyed it. And watching my two-year-old grandson see all the trucks driving by, even though he didn't really like the sirens, you know, he loves trucks, so it was fun to see his face light up as well. So thanks again to Scott Hobbs for the birthday surprise there. And I don't know that anybody can top my 60th birthday after that one. Wanted to talk to you for a minute about the governor's race here in New Jersey. Now, we have a primary coming up next week. It's on the 8th. And on the Republican side, there are four candidates running for governor: Jack Cetarelli, Hirsch Singh, Phil Rizzo, and I think his name is Levine. I think it's Mike Levine. Haven't heard much from him or Rizzo, although I am starting to see the lawn signs. So it looks like the fight is really coming down between Jack Cetarelli and Hirsch Singh. There was a debate on New Jersey 101.5 last week, and if you saw any of the video, Jack did a great job explaining, you know, his positions. Hirsch kept it seems like Hirsch is holding on to one thing, and that he's a Trump supporter. But he didn't really have a plan for school funding, didn't have a plan for the deficits and the budget woes that this state has. And a very sad thing happened at the end of the debate, and that was Hirsch Singh's campaign manager, a gentleman by the name of, and I use the term gentleman loosely, King Penna, kind of going after Jack Ciattarelli's wife in an ante room at New Jersey 101.5. And he was kind of baiting her, and he had a camera on, and so he was videotaping the whole thing. And at the end, you know, after she said, you know, you're obnoxious and I got to get away from you, he said, oh, that's going to look great on camera, on Facebook. And it's like, it really made him look like the ass that he is. And if that's the person who Hirsch Singh is relying on to run his campaign, I don't know that I want to support a campaign like that. If you're going to be disrespectful to women, disrespectful to an opponent's spouse, families are off limits as far to me, as far as politics are concerned. And Hirsch has run for several offices. I think he's run 7 different campaigns. He's lost every one of them. He's never served in an elected body. And the one thing that I kept thinking about, and I'm going to full disclosure, I've known Jack since I was a sophomore in high school. He was a year behind me. Always had a lot of respect for Jack and a lot of admiration for him. Even back then, you could tell he was a leader. And the one thing that I think we have to do is, I think we all agree, we have to get rid of Governor Murphy. We've had 2 billionaires now, John Corzine and Murphy, buy their way into the state house, and it doesn't work. They can't relate to the common man. That's why when Governor Murphy said, if you don't like taxes, maybe New Jersey isn't the state for you, that tells you right there that, you know, he's putting himself in a class above you and I. Jack laid out a pretty good school funding plan. He supports the Second Amendment. He's talking about the unions and what needs to be done on a statewide level. He wants to trim government payrolls, and I think that he's the guy who can take on Murphy. And the primary is just a few days away, but right now, a poll just came out showing that Governor Murphy has an 11-point lead at 44% to 33% over Jack Ciattarelli. Now, that will probably change should Jack win the primary next week, because when you take Singh out of it, Levine out of it, and Rizzo out of it, most of those supporters should go to Ciattarelli, so that number can shrink. The 11% number can shrink, and I would see it somewhere in the 6% range, which gets you very close to the margin of error. So they're definitely within striking distance. 4 years ago, Governor Murphy led Kim Guadagno by 29 points at this same juncture, and he was well over 50%. So he's lost some of his base. He's lost some of his stature, if you will, with the electorate, and now it looks as if Jack is making ground. And I think what you will see is that Jack wins the primary next Tuesday, and when it's just, you know, Jack and Murphy, Jack's going to expose Murphy for some of the things that he's done during the pandemic that were harmful to our senior citizens and our veterans, particularly with the way he handled the nursing home situations. So the other point that I wanted to make about Hirsch Singh, now Jack has served in the New Jersey State Assembly. He served as a Somerset County freeholder. I believe he started out as a town councilman in the borough of Raritan. He's worked in government before. He's run 2 successful businesses. And he made an interesting comment on a show several months ago. And he goes, you know, we've had the politicians, we've had the billionaires, we've had the lawyers. We've never had an accountant, a CPA, somebody who works with numbers, who has been elected governor. And every time that, you know, Governor Murphy has made, and even, you know, Chris Christie made decisions regarding the finances of the state, Jack would come out and kind of counter them and say, this is why we don't need this. And I think bringing that fiscal responsibility into the state house could be huge for the state of New Jersey, because over the last 20, 25 years, we've seen it's just been an open spigot where, you know, we're just handing money out to whoever asks for it. Tunnels to nowhere, tunnels to connect the Marina District to Atlantic City. It's just unnecessary. And then the Xanadu abortion up in the Meadowlands. So Jack Ciattarelli is my pick for governor of the state of New Jersey. And the point that I wanted to make, and this is important, Jack has the experience. He's worked with the state Senate. He's worked with the state assembly. He knows many of them. They know him. He has the endorsements of every Republican committee in the state at the county levels. This is the point that I want to make. When you're running for governor, like Hirsch Singh is, like Rizzo, like Levine, this is not a job, in my mind. And I think that anything above the county level, whether you get into state government or federal government or anything like that, I don't think it's a job that you can do without experience. This is not a job. You know, a lot of times you'll see ad in the paper for particular employment, and they'll say, we provide on-the-job training. Well, governor of New Jersey is not a job where you can provide on-the-job training and expect to be successful. There are so many different agencies you have to work with. We have, I think, 171 miles of, you know, state line from Alpine down to Cape May. And I think that this is an area where, again, you can't just come in and say, look, I won, I'm the governor, and expect to be able to lead from day one. You have to learn your state. And the one thing I'm not seeing from Hirsch Singh that I am seeing from Jack is that Jack has traveled to every county, gotten the endorsement, and Hirsch hasn't even gotten the endorsement of his own hometown or county. He says that he's a Trump supporter, but Trump does not support him. You don't see that Donald Trump came out and said, I support Hirsch Singh, you know, for governor. So if you want to ride on those coattails and you think that's enough to get you elected, I think you're sadly mistaken. So, again, the pick for me will be Jack Ciattarelli as the Republican candidate for governor. Hopefully you'll join me in that. Again, I've known Jack for probably 35 years or more, and just a solid guy, solid family, and I think he would be the best pick on the Republican side to go up against Governor Murphy. And again, right now, Murphy has an 11-point lead. I think that number will shrink after the primary should Jack win. So, you know, hopefully you'll see that as well. When we come back from the break, I want to go over something. A gentleman came into my store about a week ago talking about his new product and asking for my help in marketing. And I wanted to go over why I think I can help him, but why I think he has to do more to help himself. And we'll talk about that when we come back. We're going to step away for a quick break for the news, and when we come back, we'll talk about marketing a product and how diverse you now have to be to make that successful. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
New data from the Labor Department shows jobless claims fell to new pandemic lows last week, falling to 385,000. That's down 20,000 from the week before and the fifth straight week that's seen fewer first-time claims. Unemployment claims have been falling all year from more than 900,000 a week in January, but remain historically high. May's job report is expected to show a rebound in added positions. Economists predict that Friday's report will show an additional 656,000 jobs were added in May, a large jump from April's disappointing report. And President Biden will meet with Queen Elizabeth II during an upcoming visit to the United Kingdom. Buckingham Palace announcing the meeting Thursday, saying it will take place while Biden's in the country for a meeting of the leaders of the Group of Seven. The summit, taking place June 11th through the 13th, will be the first face-to-face meeting for the leaders of the U.S., U.K., Canada, France, Germany, Italy, and Japan in more than 2 years. This is USA Radio News.
Rockstar Radio. Did you know this station, this network, is looking for their next rockstar broadcaster? That's right, we are. And it could be you. It could be you interviewing the guests, talking to the newsmakers right in the middle of everything. Have you ever dreamed of being a rockstar show host? Now could be your chance. Together with this station, we'll help you with everything you need. The studios, the equipment, your own producer, a co-host if you'd like, and so much more. Broadcasting is changing. There's never been a need for fresh voices and unique opinions like there is right now. You can do this. Our professional team will guide you every step of the way. Sound effects, show content, building your social network media, and everything you need to be the next rockstar broadcaster. Get all the details. Email Bill at rockstar.today. That's Bill at rockstar.today. To get started with your own show, email Bill at rockstar.today. That's Bill at rockstar.today. Don't wait. You could be the next voice for America. Email Bill at rockstar.today.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. So glad you could join me. My name is Jim Gannot, the owner of Crown Trophy here in Flemington and the host of this program for coming up on 10 years here at Hunter and Chamber Radio. So glad you could join me as we get together every Thursday at this time to talk about issues that affect businesses, my business, your business. And if you ever have a particular topic that you want me to discuss, and this could be on anything, sales, marketing, employment, by all means, reach out to me, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com, and I'll be glad to do the research on it and then bring it to the program. So before the break, I was talking about a gentleman who stopped into my business absolutely out of the blue, and he's a listener of the show, and he had invented a product. And he had ordered 5,000 pieces of the product in packaging and everything, but he hasn't sold any. And so he was asking me, like, what do I do next? I'm like, why are you asking me? What do you do next? Now you have to market the product. And it seemed like it would be a good idea for him to go on something like Shark Tank. The only problem was he has no sales. So you know that he's going to get thrown out right away. The other problem was that the product would hang on a wall and had a little tab above it that you could put like a team logo or a business logo on or something like that. The only problem was when it was packaged, there's no way to get that logo in there after the sale. So that was one red flag. But he came to me and he was like, he told me how much it costs to produce, how many he currently has in inventory. He asked, who did I think would buy such a product? And I said, well, you know, you could market it to local Little League teams. You could go to someplace like Cabela's, possibly some corporations. There are people that have hat collections. It was a product to hold your hat on the wall. And I said, you know, there's people that have hat collections in their man cave of their favorite teams, and maybe they would have an interest in a product like this. But he had absolutely no clue how to market the product. And I suggested that he go to two local sporting goods stores to see if they would have an interest. And I told him it's okay if they say no. What you're trying to do is refine and perfect your pitch. It almost seemed by the end of our conversation that he was looking for me to take the product and run with it. And I was like, this is not my job, you know, to market your product. You know, if you want to sell me the patent, you know, the other thing that was appealing was that he did have a patent on it. If you want to sell me the patent and let me run with it, then I could make some improvements. But I gave him a couple of tips on what he should do, like going to a local sporting goods store to see if they would have an interest, talking to the presidents of the various local Little League baseball teams, see if there was an interest there, possibly reaching out to the buyers at Walmart, Target, and things like that to see if they would have an interest. But I also told them, don't buy any more product just yet because you have to see if this is a viable idea. It's one thing to have a patent. It's a whole different thing to be able to market it correctly. And I put them in touch with one of the businesses that Marcus Lemonis had featured on Shark Tank, not Shark Tank, The Profit on CNBC, which was a sporting goods company who had all of the major licenses for NHL, NBA, MLB, NFL, and said this may be a product they can add to their product line and then pay you a royalty for units sold. And they're based in Pennsylvania, so it wasn't going to be too hard of a trip, you know, should he decide to go that route. Gave him a bunch of different options, but it kind of showed the difference, and you often hear this term on Shark Tank where they say you have a product, you don't have a company. And this gentleman truly had a product, but he didn't have a company. He didn't have the marketing. He didn't have, you know, there was probably going to be some legal issues because I told him flat out, you can't put a sticker on this product that says New York Yankees without the Yankees' permission, Major League Baseball's permission. You couldn't put a picture of Derek Jeter or Aaron Judge on there without their permission and paying them something in return. So I said, you got to be careful how you use this product. And the fact that it was already prepackaged without the personalization, it's like, why do we have this big tab? What are we going to put there? And then how would we put it there? So as you're looking at your business and or product, you have to be able to differentiate, is it a product or is it a business? And a lot of times people will start with a particular product and try to build a business around it. And other times they'll have a business, but they need more product within it. So that's an issue that, you know, a lot of business owners face. And certainly when you have one product, and as we saw in the pandemic, if you're relying too heavily on one product line, if you don't have diversification in your business, you can starve and die pretty quickly. If you look at restaurants, if most of them were relying on dine-in patrons, then when the pandemic hit and nobody can dine in, they quickly had to pivot to curbside pickup or delivery. Some, over time, were allowed to create outdoor seating. And what we're finding now is that the really good restaurants, those who adapted the best, are the ones who kind of did a hybrid of all four. They still have the internal dining. They've now got outside dining. They are still doing delivery of business, or they're doing, you know, some form of pickup, whether it's a curbside or coming in to the store now. So though that business model worked well. Now, for instance, in my business, the trophy business, if you were just a trophy store, and we saw it, I know of 8 trophy stores that went out of business in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, and probably more across the country, because they were solely reliant on the awards industry. Where I got lucky was I also have a sign shop. I do varsity jackets. I do promotional items. We started working on the personal protection equipment and selling that, hand sanitizer, stuff like that. So I had options, and I could market those options. And prior to the pandemic, I think my sign shop represented about 3% of my business. In one day, it became 100% of my business. And so I had to, you know, flip and really embrace that. And whether it was for graduation signs or social distancing signs, restaurant signs, things like of that nature, I really had to flip very quickly, and I think I did it in about 36 hours, back into a full-time sign shop. Now, as sports is back and signs are back, I would say that it's more of a 60-40 split, and I'm more comfortable with that balance than I am with 97-3. So a cautionary tale would be, in your business, are you reliant on one product, or do you have several product lines and revenue streams to work from? And I often think about car dealerships, and I stay close with some of the sales managers in some of the car dealerships, and a lot of them are saying that they don't have the inventory right now, that because of a semiconductor shortage, that it's hard for them to get new vehicles. So they're paying top dollar for used vehicles, but if you're a person that wants to get a new car, I want a new car, I want a red one, it's got to have this, it's got to have that, and when they tell you it's nowhere available in the country, you're probably not real happy. So the cautionary tale coming out of the pandemic would be, look at your business. Are there complementary products that you can be carrying? Is your product line enough, or is it a dinosaur? And then how can you adapt to it? So and make it better for you. But if we get back into another shutdown, you could very quickly be in trouble with how you're able to adapt and respond. And we saw hundreds of thousands of businesses go out of business. I don't want that to happen to you. So now's the time to start looking around. And are there other businesses that you can co-promote with, co-partner with, work together with, even competitors? You know, I said this in an article in the Star Ledger when I was interviewed about my new partnership with Bradshaw Awards. And either John said it or I think I said it, but there's enough business in our industry that we can both, you know, be profitable and both make a decent living. We have to go out, obviously, and get it and service those accounts. But, you know, if you're constantly fighting for the same dollars, who wins? You know, so, you know, John may win one contract. I may win one contract. Hey, pool our resources together. Let's get all the contracts and fulfill them and make some decent money. So that's another area that people have to look at as well. Wanted to talk to you about another thing that came out of the pandemic, and that is the supply chain shortage. And I just mentioned it before about the semiconductors, but there's new data out that shows, and I don't remember the exact number now, but at one point there were over 120 ships parked outside the Port of Elizabeth, about another 140 outside the Port of Los Angeles, and they could not be offloaded fast enough. We're seeing it in our industry. We're seeing it in several other industries where product is sitting on a boat in a container, but it's not on our shelves. And I'm now telling our customers, you know, I just told a gentleman this morning, when you pick an award, pick three. You know, your first choice, second choice, third choice, because there's a good chance your first and second may be sold out. So before I have to keep chasing you and making phone calls and saying, you know, hey, that product isn't available, you know, can you pick another one? And, you know, probably pissing the customer off in the process, at least, you know, they can come to me prepared with their first, second, third choice. But we are seeing a lot of shortages across a lot of industries, including food supply, and it's having an impact across the board. There was some vegetable, I think, that was in short supply right now. You know, so it there's a trickle-down effect. Right now, there aren't enough truckers to deliver the product to the various businesses. The ports are working at about 25 to 40% capacity. So they, even though you have 140 ships out there waiting to be offloaded, if it takes 2 to 3 weeks to offload a ship, do the math. It's going to take you several months. So I anticipate that these shortages are going to continue for somewhere between 12, 18, or 24 months. We've seen the cost, and I think everybody has to prepare themselves in a lot of industries. If your industry is reliant on wood or metal, you're going to see some pretty sharp increases. Wood by as much as 100% over the next several months. And what do we mean when we say wood? It's not just the building supplies at the home centers that are affected. There's paper shortages. There's cardboard shortages. And all of this will have a negative impact, driving prices further up. Initially, they were blaming companies like Amazon because as people were at home doing buying online and doing e-commerce, these companies like Amazon had to ship the product out. They were using cardboard boxes. And so there was a shortage. And we use a lot of cardboard boxes in our business, and we were getting letters from our manufacturer saying, we got to raise our prices because, you know, we're working three shifts and we can't keep up with the demand. So so you have a cardboard box issue, a shortage. You have paper issues. And then with general wood in general, you're going to have some issues. And I saw it on a simple project I was working on in my house. repairing a shed where, you know, two sheets of fascia that would have and should have cost me like $30 ended up costing me close to $60 each. So I wanted to bring that to your attention that even though, and I want to say this in two different ways, we're coming out of the pandemic. And it seems like everybody flipped a switch 2 weeks ago and said, we're done. You know, no more masks. That's it. We're done. We're going out to the restaurants. We're booking vacations. We're traveling. The rest of the world is going to take a little more time to catch up. And, you know, you're going to see some supply chain issues. Don't be mad at the retailer for these issues. But understand that prices will probably be going up as well. Now, minimum wage is going to go up. All of these things are, it's just going to keep going at the same pace. So, you know, you can be making minimum wage and that can go from $13 to $14 to $15. But if everything else is going up, you're pretty much in the same boat that you always were. So just be prepared that it's not always the panacea that they are promising you. So again, supply chain, huge issues. That we have to be concerned with for several reasons. Job numbers came out, and I believe it was better than expected. I don't have the exact number. I want to say they added like 880,000 jobs. There's been a lot of talk in recent weeks about that people there or the businesses can't hire enough people. I drive 12 miles from Bridgewater to Flemington every day to go to work. I can't tell you how many help wanted signs I see, whether it's a swing set dealer, a pool installer, a landscaping company, restaurants, McDonald's. The McDonald's in Clinton has 5 lawn signs, you know, now hiring. There's opportunities out there. People just aren't working. So the backlash has been that a lot of people are blaming the unemployment benefits as the reason why people won't go back to work. They'd rather just sit at home and earn the free money, if you want to use the term earn, rather than go back to work. So recently it was announced that Florida has become the 23rd state that's going to end the $300 unemployment benefit boost, which it hopes will ease the business hiring woes. So Florida officials announced an end of the $300 weekly federal pandemic unemployment compensation supplement on March 24th, making Florida the 23rd state to opt out of the jobless boost in a bid to encourage people to get back to work amid a labor shortage and a booming economy. And that's the hardest thing to understand. You have a booming economy when things are good. You can get a good job. You can get good pay. But people would rather sit home. So Florida said, nah, we're going to follow South Dakota's lead, and we're going to suspend the $300 unemployment benefit boost. So there's 22 other states that are doing this. Other states are also looking into it, and in the hopes that it would drive more people to come back to work. And so the decision to withdraw from the jobless boost was in part prompted by April labor market data, which showed that total private sector employment in Florida increased by only 18,800 jobs, with nearly 500,000 job postings available in the state for job seekers. Florida's economy has bounced back tremendously, with over 460,000 jobs available throughout our state and the strongest economic conditions in the nation, said Dane Eagle, who's the DEO secretary. Florida's employers are also seeing employment growth as more Floridians, including some who completely left the workforce, are now eagerly re-entering the workforce. So I would love for somebody to either call or email me and explain why they feel staying on unemployment is better for them than just going back to work if they have the opportunity. A lot of states are now saying that they are talking about implementing the proof of seeking a job in order to continue the benefits. And what that basically is, it's an old law that said you had to, when unemployment would interview you every week, you had to provide proof that you had actually gone out and either interviewed for a job or filled out an application at least 3 locations. A lot of people are balking at that, like, like, why are you making me do that? It's like, because we're tired of, you know, handing out money for nothing. Restaurants are particularly hard hit. I talked to the owner of a restaurant last Saturday night who said that she cannot fill positions. And it doesn't matter what pay they're offering. People just don't want to work. And some restaurants have offered sign-on bonuses, interview bonuses, and still they're not getting the response that they thought they would. And it's surprising because even young people, 17, 18-year-olds who could bus tables, who could wait on tables, aren't taking advantage of these positions either. So, again, September's coming, and it'll be interesting to see what happens then, because if people continue to stay on unemployment, jobs will get filled. And I think you're going to find a rebound unemployment situation where the people who rode the gravy train eventually will find themselves without a job simply because the companies had to fill it with someone else. So I wouldn't wait too long and collecting the unemployment benefits. Sorry. So that's one of the things that I think people have to look at as well is like how long is too long. the other thing is, with regards to employment, is now companies are starting to inform their employees that if you've been on working at home during the pandemic, that now it's time to get back to work in the office. So now the question becomes, like, are you ready to go back to the office? And what does that look like? How many days a week are you going into the office? Will you still be allowed to do any remote work? How are parents impacted if their child's schools aren't reopened fully yet? What will it look like in the fall? The governor has, here in New Jersey, has said that he would like all children back in school in September, not in a hybrid situation. So what will that look like if the parent has to be the caretaker and the teacher and the mom and the dad, you know, how does that work in September if we don't go back to school? So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. The next question that has to be asked is, are you preparing or are you prepared for it? It's been 15, 16 months where people have been working from home. Are you prepared to go back to an office? Do you have any reservations about going to an office? Any fears about going back to an office? Or are you looking forward to it? Do you want that interaction? And a lot of companies that have saved a ton of money on lease space are saying that they don't necessarily want their employees to come back right away. My wife's company is saying possibly September and then possibly on some form of a split schedule, like 2.5 days home, 2.5 days at work, or as needed in the office. Some companies have even said, forget about having your cubicle. They're just going to have state workstations. So rather than having an assigned cubicle, if you come into the office, you'll kind of plug in your laptop into a docking station. Your phone will connect, and that's where you'll be working that particular day. And it may not be the same space each day. So a lot of changes coming to the workplace. We need to see some changes in the workforce, and I would love to hear from you how you're adapting to these new requirements and whether or not you're looking forward to it or if you're looking for something else. I'd also like to hear from anybody who is either opening a new business or contemplating opening a new business or buying a business to see what that motivation was and how you're preparing for it. And what you anticipate coming out of the first, like, 6 months, 1 year, 5 years coming out of this pandemic. Will businesses come back and be stronger, or will they continue to struggle? And how has being home for 16 months affected your shopping habits? What was the percentage of things you purchased online before the pandemic? What was it during? What will it be after? And do you think that's going to change how you shop in the future? And I've had some people who have told me that, you know, they go out to their car once every 2 or 3 weeks and start it just so they know that it'll start. Because they haven't left the house. They've done all their shopping online. Boxes show up every afternoon in an Amazon Prime truck. So how will your shopping habits change over the course of the next several months? Do you need a brick-and-mortar store, or can you do without? So there's a lot that has to be looked at as it pertains to business, and we'll continue to do that over the next several weeks here on the program, Taking Care of Business. And hopefully we'll have some answers for you in the near future. A friend of mine showed me this article and said, you have to share this with your listeners because it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I have to agree. So there is a new term. Well, it's new to me. I've never heard of this term. And a lot of people are like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I would never refer to them that way. So there's a new specific word that is starting to make its way around in different circles. And if you haven't heard it, consider yourself lucky. But we know that there's a lot of talk about people and how they identify. And we've seen corporate America, after the email signature, allow you to place the pronouns that you wanted to be identified for. So let's say you're a heterosexual male. You might say him, he, heterosexual female, her, she, stuff like that. But people put all kinds of pronouns. Some people want to be called they, I, whatever. So there's a new term out, and this would be to describe, but not be gender specific, the children of your siblings. So your brother or sister has children, and rather than calling them a niece or nephew, because you know you don't want to place labels on them, the new term out there, and you know, prepare yourself, is the word nibbling. So this is your sibling's child, niece or nephew. They become your nibblings. I can guarantee you this is a word that will never escape my mouth again when referring to any of my nieces or nephews. Maybe I'm not as progressive as others, but I was always taught male, female, that's what I'm going to go by. However anybody else identifies, that's fine. I don't care. But I can't conform to all of the different labels anymore. I can't conform to all the different initials. It used to be like LGBTQT. Now it seems like it's the whole alphabet. So won't be calling my nieces and nephews and nibblings. They will continue to be my nieces and nephews, regardless of how they're identifying. I'll try to respect that, but I just can't see myself getting into all these different terms and trying to make sense of any of them at any time. Sorry about that. That's how I roll. In sports news, kind of shocking, kind of not shocking news yesterday. Duke University's head basketball coach Mike Krzyzewski has announced that this upcoming season will be his last at Duke University, where he's won 5 national championships and almost 1,100 victories. One of my favorite coaches, on and off the court, how he carries himself. He has a great show on SiriusXM that I listen to periodically. He's written some great books about life and coaching that I enjoy reading. I'm going to miss seeing him on the sidelines and just the general thought process and taskmaster that he is as he approaches his team. So Mike Krzyzewski stepping down as the head coach at Duke University. It looks like one of his assistant coaches, even though they've already been doing a pretty top-secret confidential job search for a new coach, it looks like one of the assistants will slide into the new head coaching role. Not a coach you're going to be able to replace easily. Not a coach whose successes speak for themselves are you going to be able to replace easily. So I will definitely be paying more attention to Duke basketball next year because I do want to see him succeed, and also it'll be the last opportunity I get to see him coach. So looking forward to that, even though it's a little bit of sad news if you're a Duke University basketball fan. That's just about going to wrap it up
for taking care of business with Jim Gannot this week. As discussed earlier in the program, New Jersey has lifted its mask mandate and social distancing requirements. We are getting closer to full capacity in restaurants, dining halls, things like that. No indoor gathering limits as of June 4th. That'll be lifted, as well as the 30% limit on large indoor venues with fixed seating capacity of 1,000-plus persons. So it looks like, you know, we're turning the corner. The nation as a whole looks like it's turning a corner, so hopefully we'll get there. I've had my two shots. My wife got her second shot today. So we're feeling better, and hopefully if you've been separated from your family as a result of not being vaccinated, because I know I have not spent enough time with my two-month-old granddaughter, you know, you'll be able to get back and enjoy family time again. Once again, I do want to thank Scott Hobbs for the birthday celebration that he provided for me with the parade of fire trucks, police cars, and ambulances from Bridgewater Township. That was kind of special, and just great memories for me on my 60th birthday, so I do appreciate that. And thanks to everybody who has taken the time to wish me a happy birthday on Facebook or called or written or sent a card. I appreciate that as well. Well, as always, it's been my pleasure joining you today, and I always end the show with some great advice I got from my father when I was just 6 years old that guides me in my personal and professional life every day. Maybe you can use it in your lives as well, when he said, "Never let it rest until your good is better, and your better is best." If you have ideas for upcoming program topics or guests, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter at JimGannot83, or on Facebook on the show's page, Taking Care of Business with Jim Gannot. For more information about me and my businesses, visit www.jimgannot. I am Jim Gannot, and I'm taking care of business. Make it a productive week, everybody. And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all right. Taking care of business and working overtime.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The White House announced more details Thursday about the program to share COVID vaccines with other countries. White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator Jeff Zients said that the donations of shots would be coming from the U.S.'s surplus supply, and the majority of the first shipment of 25 million doses would be shared through the United Nations COVAX program. He added the donations are being made to further the overall goal of ending the pandemic globally. And new data from the Labor Department showed that new jobless claims fell to a pandemic low last week, falling to 385,000. That's down 20,000 from the week before and the fifth straight week that's seen fewer first-time claims. Unemployment claims have been falling all year, from a high of more than 900,000 in January, but remain historically high. May's job report is expected to show a rebound in added positions. Economists predict Friday's report will show an additional 656,000 jobs were added in May, a large jump from April's disappointing report. This is USA Radio News.
Recently, Facebook announced its ban on former President Trump, but promised to review the ban in 6 months. Now, Newsmax wants to know if you think Trump should be back on Facebook. Vote in Newsmax's national poll and let us know your opinion. Just text the word NORTH to 39747. That's NORTH to 39747. It takes just seconds. Make your voice heard. We'll share poll results with the 30 million people who watch Newsmax TV. Forbes calls Newsmax a news powerhouse. It's already the fourth largest cable news channel in America, with great recent guests like Donald Trump, Mike Huckabee, Franklin Graham, John Voight, Alan Dershowitz, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Mike Pompeo, and so many more. Newsmax is on all major cable systems. If your cable company doesn't carry Newsmax, call them. Tell them you want Newsmax or you can switch. So vote now in the Newsmax poll on Facebook's Trump ban. Just text NORTH to 39747. Let Newsmax and America know your opinion.
The FBI says it's traced the ransomware attack against meat producer JBS back to a criminal group based in Russia. It's the second major attack from criminals based in the country against a major company operating in the United States, with the May attack on Colonial Pipeline. One congressman believes that President Biden shouldn't meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin for a scheduled summit later this month, after this latest cyber attack. North Carolina Republican Representative Richard Hudson tells Fox News that a summit between the two leaders should only come after Russia stops the hacks.
It's inconceivable to think that a group of rogue Russian hackers is somehow operating inside Russia without at least the tacit consent, if not under the direction of Vladimir Putin. I mean, think about if there were a group of rogue hackers here in America attacking other countries, our FBI would track them down immediately and shut them down. And so all I'm saying is that don't reward Vladimir Putin with a high-profile summit as long as he's not doing anything about the hacking of our critical infrastructure here in America.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, and I want to tell you that arthritis is not a genetic thing. It's not a disease of aging. Neither is osteoporosis. Get a hold of my book. It's All in Your Head. It goes into the 25 different diseases you get when you have osteoporosis of the skull. These are all reversible. You take the Healthy Bone and Joint Pack, the MSM, vitamin D3, stay away from all the bad foods, including gluten, and guess what? You'll regrow all your bones, including your skull and your legs and your hips and everything else. Contact us at usaradiohealth.com. That's usaradiohealth.com.
Newly released emails are showing the reactions of public health officials in the U.S. to reporting on the origins of the coronavirus in the early days of the pandemic. Tim Berg has more.
Top U.S. health officials, including Anthony Fauci, scrambled in late January 2020 to respond to public reporting of a potential connection between COVID-19 and the Wuhan Institute of Virology in China. The insight into their response comes from examining over 3,000 pages of emails belonging to Fauci, which were released under the Freedom of Information Act. Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul saying there's no more questions regarding what Fauci knew regarding a lab leak and when he knew it.
Now even Dr. Fauci is saying that we should investigate it, but the emails paint a disturbing picture of Dr. Fauci from the very beginning worrying that he had been funding gain-of-function research, and he knows it to this day but hasn't admitted.
That audio courtesy of Fox News. Other emails show journalists gushing over Fauci's COVID-19 response. From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
And the USFL will return in the spring of 2022. The Spring Football League originally played from 1983 to 1985 and featured future Hall of Famers Jim Kelly, Reggie White, and Steve Young. Dates and team locations are yet to be announced, but the league says that it has retained some of the original team names. For USA Radio News, I'm Dan Naraki.